Welcome to the City Spotlight.
It's in! City goal!
Now, your host, Jen Cease, on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
It's soccer time. Welcome into the downtown studios of KMOX Radio. I'm Jen Cease, and we'll be your host for the City Spotlight tonight. Matt Rocchio's on the controls, but he's going to have to get more involved in the show. I'm going to make him work for it tonight. He's not just going to push buttons. We're going to get him to talk as well. Because St. Louis City SC, as we know, has four games under the leadership of interim head coach David Critchley. Note that interim title, by the way, no longer caretaker, with sporting director Lutz Pfannenstiel confirming with Tom Ackerman last Sports on a Sunday morning that Critch will lead the team for the remainder of this season, give the team a little bit of stability going forward and not have to make any changes, as of course the transfer window is going to be coming up and possibly looking for those kinds of changes on the pitch. Critch will stay for the remainder of this season. The team is 19 games in, number 14 in the Western Conference right now, and their record is 3-10-6 with their latest result, a 4-2 loss last night to Orlando. Now, in the press conference today, David Critchley talked about the fact that while he certainly knew that taking the team in a straight line upward trajectory isn't a realistic thing for any coach to do, he does believe certain measures like expected points, goals scored, some attacking measures like that are improving. So he's now focusing on some balance.
To win football games, you have to score goals. So we started there. We started with trying to attack better, more frequent, more often, with higher quality. That's been good for us. Now it's trying to face the next problem, which is conceding goals. It's trying to lock down the defensive side a little bit better for us. With every problem, there's got to be a solution. And my job is to try and find the solution and be better defensively as a unit and stop conceding many goals.
Yeah, well, Critch noted a positive training week for the team during their 10-day break from games, not from practice, but from games. He did call out a few factors that contributed to Orlando's ability to jump on top of the scoreline early in last night's game.
The game plan, I think the two things that I kind of tried to figure out why it is one, the conditions of what we're playing in. It's hot out there. It's difficult conditions to play in. And then the second one, the quality to Orlando. I didn't give them enough credit last night. They're a very good team, and I think they're going to make an excellent run this year as a group. They're well coached. They're well organized. Their movement off the ball made it really, really difficult for us. If we didn't win it back within the four or five passes, that's where you started to see their sequences of 11, 12, 13 pass sequences coming together. So we missed a couple of opportunities to win it early, because once they got settled, you could see that we had to move around quite a lot to win the ball back.
Something else that didn't work well for City was maintaining a consistent midfield attack while minimizing Orlando's chances to transition through the midfield.
One of the things we talked to the team about is just trying to be proactive and make decisions. So if Marcel was going to join the attack maybe a little bit more, perhaps one of the other midfielders can come and support that balance for Marcel leaving that space. And that was definitely one area that we got exploited in yesterday. So we missed some moments where we had the structure kind of out of the midfield a little bit too disconnected. It was a game where we felt like we could definitely create a lot of opportunities with having Marcel start deeper but join the attack. Unfortunately, we just, you know, it bit us in the backside the first couple of, you know, 15 minutes of the game.
However, on a brighter note, it was exciting to see City right back Thomas Totlin with goal contributions while continuing to increase his fitness in his minutes.
Obviously, I had two assists yesterday, which I was super, super happy about. You know, for Totsies, we know his qualities when he can get higher up the field and get us some service into the box. So that's been some of our adjustments when we have the ball. And I was super happy for him yesterday. Obviously, he's had, you know, some criticism maybe as of late with some defending moments. So for him to come out and have resilience and be brave on the ball and create two assists, I was super proud for him.
Thomas Totlin also spoke at the press conference. We'll have his thoughts for you on the next game player profile. We do that every City game on our sister station, Y98, 30 minutes ahead of scheduled kickoff time. So that'll be 7 p.m. on Saturday, and we'll have the thoughts from Thomas Totlin as well. Before we go to our break in our next segment where we'll talk to Dale Schilly, I do want to pull Matt Rocchio in here, because Matt Rocchio is not just pushing all the controls here and making things work. He's often at press conferences. You run like 50 other shows that you do, talking all kinds of sports and soccer. What was your take from the press conference today and a performance last night?
I'm glad you pulled the one about Hartle in the midfield and pushing
gonna,
for the offense.
I knew you were going to look at that one in
because that's the big one for me, because you know the positioning of Hartle's all been a big thing, but I'm just wondering, you know, was it smart for them to play the style they played? And I know we got the answer as to why they did it, which was pushing offense, but is it smart to play five offensive-minded players against one of the best transition teams in the league? That just seems, you know, a lot of the conversations around Melberg, take away your preference or the preference of what City wanted. That's obviously a material conversation, but remove that for a moment and focus on whether or not you're putting your players in the best position to succeed. And I just wonder if that group of five attackers, including Marcel Hartl having to play the double pivot as a more attacking-minded player, if that was the best group of players to put on the field against the best, if not the best, one of the best transition teams. Because clearly, they ate you alive in transition the entire game.
They really did. They kind of sliced through it. Just looking back at some of the highlights and also listening to the Apple broadcast, there was a few times it was mentioned, it was like, Where's the City midfield? Where is it right now? And I wonder, too, it's not that Hartl can't do that job. He certainly can. He's been a defensive role before, but it maybe is that tweak where it says, we're going to keep you here. I want to make sure that you're available for the attack. However, be a little bit more defensive-minded.
And we also know that that's not the best place to play him, though. Like, that was a big thing. I know Taylor Twelveman of Apple TV was a big person on... the further you move Hartl away from the opponent's box, you're making a mistake in his positioning. And it was necessary because you didn't have Edward Leuven, and you still don't have Edward Leuven. But, I'm not saying, Akia Watts had a bad game, so I might sound stupid pointing this out, but it seemed like they were getting the job done with Watts and Morales and just focusing on Hartl being the straw that stirs the drink up front. This time they decided to change things up. And my last point on the positioning and the lineup group is you can't have five forwards and the one that you add to the equation being Cedric Toyshirt then only touch the ball twice inside the opponent's box. If you're going to play with five forwards, if you're going to play with five attacking players, they have to make an attacking impact on the game, and Toyshirt two touches in the opponent's box, that's not having the impact he had to have. There's a lot of guys who could have given you midfield control, ball retention, press, more pressing than Toyshirt does in that spot in the lineup, and I think it would have given them a better chance to win.
All right, with that in mind, we'll talk about that more, lessons learned, like what Matt just talked about, and the upcoming pivot to Houston, which is not going to be necessarily all that different of a team in certain aspects. We're going to have Dale Schilly. He's our Y98 game analyst. He's up next on KMOX.
It's never a bad thing when your next opponent plays a similar style to the previous one. We know transition to attack moments for them, transition to defend moments for us are going to be a key to the game. We're going to have to take care of those moments very, very well. You take away the first maybe 20, 25 minutes of the game yesterday. We made it competitive. We got after it, so I have to start a lot better against Houston. But yeah, it's a similar preparation for us now moving forward.
That was City interim head coach David Critchley talking earlier today at the press conference. Matt Rocchio and I, Matt's on the controls. He's helping me out today on the show. We're just talking a little bit also about the midfield transition. So it's probably a good time to check in with somebody who analyzes the game on a regular basis. Dale Schilly, City Academy Director, and was the game analyst last night in a very hot booth. Dale Schilly, how are you doing? Have you cooled off from last night?
Yeah, it's a new weight loss program. Yeah, go stand in the booth.
For sure. You know, we played a lot from Critch today, and of course he talks about the things they got to work on. He felt like he, maybe underestimated Orlando a little bit. And one of the things that Matt and I landed on was that midfield transition. And
wake up in four.
It seems like it's not going to be, certainly they're different teams, but Houston might be a similar prep with Orlando. Is that a good thing that Critch is looking for, is to kind of look at that transition and look at what City needs to do to try to grab these 3 points on the road?
Yeah, I would say the first thing you have to look at is how are you going to compensate for the lack of bite and real defending and ball winning capabilities of the players that you have access to right now. I rewatched the game or parts of it, and just in the center of the park when you start Cello and Akil both as your sixes in the center of the park, they're both really good in the ball, good passers, good soccer players. But when you look at the counterparts, Arujo and Aduesta, who are both have some bite and can tackle and willing to get after the ball, that's a hard thing to disrupt the other team's rhythm and flow when you have ball playing central midfield players and not guys in there that are disruptors or guys that can get in and tackle and stop the other team from progressing the ball forward. And I would say that first goal, even the second goal, are great examples of just not having the personnel in there to be able to disrupt. And I don't think it's any fault on Critch or of the players. They're playing what they have access to. And, you know, that's a Chris Durkin type role. So, yeah, I mean, is it – how do you prepare for Houston? I think first you have to figure out how you're going to defend and where you're going to get the ball back at, how you're going to get it back.
Yeah, it's a great point. I mean, Critch gave us some player updates today. Certainly not everybody, but just talked about the fact that at the time of the press conference was around 1 o'clock today. Timo Baumgartel kind of needed some further evaluation, wasn't sure. Cedric Teuchert, a little bit more optimistic, but still unsure. The guy you just mentioned, Chris Durkin, your play disruptor, probably not for this game, maybe for the next match against RSL. Michael Wenzel got in a little bit at two, but that what a puzzle that is too for Critch, right? To have to not only figure out a tight turn game, but a tight turn away when the team's going to look to train tomorrow morning and then have to get people on a plane. That's adds a whole nother level of who you're getting ready to prep for that travel roster.
Yeah, I mean, when you look, you know, Houston played in Minnesota last night. So then they traveled last evening, you know, did a regen probably today, train tomorrow, game on Saturday. We probably have the worst end of the stick being at home and then having to travel. So, yeah, a little bit more difficult. Certainly a short turnaround and hard to prepare. You know, interesting on Chris Durkin, if you recall when he was back, when he started to look like he was going to get back into the lineup before he re-injured himself, he was playing as a center back.
Yeah.
And, you know, and so it's like the situation that Critch is dealing with there is how do you cover the midfield and have disruption and ball winning and the sort of things that you need from your central midfield. And then how do you have distribution and quality passing out of the guys in the back, which is, I would assume, why he put Chris as a center back to help in terms of his ball playing and being able to help the team get out of the back, which, you know, was a situation on the third goal yesterday.
And what are your thoughts overall, Dale, about this team kind of pushing forward offensively against such a transition team? We're going to see the same thing. He was just talking about it's a similar squad in Houston, so they're going to be faced with the same equation of they want to play more offensive, but they're going up against one of the better transition teams in the league. So how do you find that balance against a team that's kind of built to attack you if you do, you know, spread things out offensively?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a tough one because think about it this way. We spoke about it on the radio last night is when we open ourselves up and we are creating chances, we're also giving up chances. And when we shore things up at the back and deny chances, we're not creating chances. So it's a really tough situation because you're trying to win games. Critch knows that the playoffs is something that he's got as a target to try to help lose the interim title off of his name so he can, you know, become the head coach for St. Louis City. And so he's trying to get out and score goals and win games, but it leaves us open like we saw in the first two goals yesterday. So really tough to play going forward without committing too many numbers, still create chances, and then prevent the counterattack, particularly when we don't have a lot of pace at the back. We can be really vulnerable when we're defending higher up the field and have to deal with the space behind us. Tough question. I wish I had the answer for you, but that is the challenge again tomorrow night.
Yeah, you know, I remember in the broadcast last night, I don't remember exactly what minute it was, but Dale, you made a point a couple times with Joey to talk about the fact that at this particular point in time of the game that Orlando's chances were good, you know, really solid, and you kept saying that City's chances were half chances. What made those, like, what sticks out to you when you see those differences between two teams attacking?
Yeah, I would say that what we saw last night was a rhythm and a flow to Orlando's attacking situations and just the speed at which they were able to get across the midfield line and into the front third. When you think about that first goal, just how quickly it went from back third to front third, you know, as that switched the point of attack and then just in for a tap in into the open goal. It looked like it was set up and drawn up in a way. I mean, just knowing how they played. For us, it was slower to get to the 18, difficult to find those real moments, those real clear-cut opportunities. And I think a big part of that is the structure at which Orlando played, with really four ball-winning players in their starting 11. When you look at both center backs and both sixes having ball-winning capabilities, they're capable of slowing down an attack, keeping you away from goal. When you look at our first 11, I would say we would have two ball winners out of that first 11 in Baumgartel and Hebert. I don't know that I would consider Jaden Reed or Totlin as ball winners. And then the center of the park, I wouldn't consider Akil or Hartle as ball winners either. So I think because of the structure and the personnel that Orlando put on the field, it made it really difficult for us to get forward.
And talking about the offense that was more of a positive that they're trying to push for, what do you think happened early there in the second half? Because they open up 30 minutes in the second half, not a shot at all for St. Louis. What happened in the offense that just really maybe put the game kind of out of reach to start the second half?
Yeah, again, I think it's just maybe some attention to the detail. Let's think about it this way. When Orlando went up 3-0 after 21 minutes, I would think that the foot came off the gas, and my guess would be that at halftime, Oscar Pareja probably had a word with the guys about, hey, we can't let this slip away. You had a 3-0 lead. We shouldn't be in the position that we're in right now. And I just think it was a matter of tightening the screws, making sure that they weren't going to take as many risks going forward, keep themselves locked down at the back, and know that eventually we were going to have to open up to find a way to get a chance at goal, find the third goal, that they were going to be able to get a counterattack, and that's the way it played out.
All right, thanks, Dale. We will be missing you on the analysis. I will do my best impression of a Dale Shilly, and we'll see you on the flip side.
All right. Thank you, guys.
That was Dale Shilly, St. Louis City Academy Director and usually our game analyst on Y98. We've got more to come. Hang with us. We're going to talk with Alex Longer. He's the Director of Goalkeeping and First Team Goalkeeper Coach for St. Louis City SC. Let's pick his brain about set pieces and goalkeeping. He's up next on KMOX. On the City Spotlight, Jen C's here with you. Well, last night's Wednesday night match against Orlando, 21 people officially became U.S. citizens at a pregame naturalization ceremony. You can find a great article, by the way, on it, written by Ben Hockman of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. He always great articles. Talked about Nando Hernandez, former St. Louis Ambush player, and also Alex Longer. You might know and hear about Alex's work as the city director of goalkeeping and first team goalkeeper coach. Alex, welcome to the show. Thanks for calling in. So excited to finally get you on the microphone with me.
Hey, Jen. Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Well, tell me a little bit. It was so great to watch that ceremony, your process of going through. I was born a U.S. citizen, so, you know, I didn't really have to do a whole lot other than my mom and dad getting a, you know, birth certificate. That is a big process for somebody that wants to go through that. How long did that take, and what was that like for you?
No, absolutely. So in total, it was about 7 years. I came to the U.S. in 2018 as a graduate student. Finished my master's degree in 2020. During the college time, that's where I met my now wife, Maggie. So we got married in 2021, and then we went through like the green card process, the marriage-based green card. Then you get that green card under certain conditions, and you have to start to try to remove these conditions. And then when you actually have that marriage-based green card, for 3 years, you can actually apply for citizenship. And obviously, this now came all to a close yesterday.
Wow. I've heard that it's a long process, and that just underscores that. In the article with Ben, you talked a little bit about feeling a couple of emotions as you were down there and receiving that, besides the fact that you had a game coming up to focus on, that you were feeling thankful and proud of that moment. What made you start that process?
Obviously, coming to the United States and just getting this incredible opportunity to study here, so I was extremely thankful for the country to open up like this academic journey for me. And then on the other end, obviously, like meeting my wife and her family, and just like from the beginning, feeling a part of this family. And I think these both things of like obviously being extremely thankful to the country, and then being a part of an American family, always made me feel like that I want to be an American citizen at some point. And I think this led me to make the decision to apply for citizenship.
That's awesome. Well, welcome, and I'm so happy for you to have gone through that, and it sounds like it was amazing. I feel like you've been really part of the City family for such a long time, you know, working with City 2. You've seen the club grow. Where it's come when you were starting to where it is now, and you also becoming a citizen, you're reflecting on the past 2.5 years or so, a little bit longer if you go back to the very early days of City. What are your reflections right now on where the team has come and the growth that it's going through right now?
Now, obviously, being a part of with City, like pretty much from the beginning, from 2022, and as you mentioned, like with City 2 to start with, and then like since 2023 is the first team. I think the club made incredible steps towards a really promising future. Obviously, especially with the first year where you had this tremendous success, winning the Western Conference, making the playoffs. And I think definitely you're like a little stage right now of like maybe you can call it growing pains, where you just have to clean up certain things. And I think we're like in a good development stage right now, especially with David Critchley since he took over as an interim head coach. I think like we showed some promising performances, and I obviously hope like now leading into Saturday's match against Houston, we can build on them.
You know, when I watched you from the very beginning, when I first got going also with City after City's first home game going to practices, and I would see you, of course, working with Roman Berkey, with Ben Lunt and other goalkeepers training in that way, you yourself coming from goalkeeping. What is that like? You've been asked about it before to have it. That group is really special. You're working with them all the time. I've occasionally taken a few pictures of the foot skills training that you do alongside, of course, all the crazy saves. What is your view on Roman, of course, the best in the league? Ben Lunt had to step in, did a phenomenal job. City's really lucky having such a great goalkeeping staff and group of players who can really step up at any moment.
No, I think you obviously hit it on a lot of good points. So, like, first of all, extremely thankful to work with the quality goalkeepers that I have, with Roman, Ben, and Christian. I think all three of them do an incredible job. Obviously, in their different roles of, like, Roman being the number one, Ben the number two, and then Christian as the number three, and the young, really talented goalkeeper that wants to kind of, like, take good steps in his development. And as you mentioned it as well, like, I think I have an incredible staff. I'm not sure if a lot of people know that we actually have 4 full-time goalkeeper coaches at St. Louis City SC. We have Tim Kelly in the second team. We have Mark Pace at the U16, U18s, and then Michael Ritterbeck at the U14s, U15s. So thankful to the club that they allow me the opportunity to work with the 3 other goalkeeper coaches. I think we have a great staff there, and like, we really work along the same ideas, same principles, have weekly meetings to really try to develop St. Louis goalkeeping and the goalkeepers within St. Louis. And obviously, I think there's a rich history of really great St. Louis goalkeepers. So obviously, we want to kind of like, knock on this one and really kind of like keep continuing this this really promising past into like a promising future.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned that last night, of course, also the club honoring the fact of 75th anniversary of the U.S., the 1950 team that beat England. And of course, those guys who were there representing the families of those players from St. Louis talked about how it was really important. One of the reasons that the U.S. was able to win was entirely involved in their goalkeeper, Frank Borghi, who not only could stop shots, but what Ty Keogh has called out time and time again was how important it was, and that Frank knew when to come off his line. That is a really important goalkeeper skill, right?
No, absolutely. And I think obviously, like, you guys can see every week that Roman really combines all of these skill sets with like playing with his feet, coming off the line, trying to sweeping moments, like in case the ball is outside the box, like coming for crosses and claiming crosses when they're inside the box. And obviously a fitting moment that it was actually Roman's 500 pro club appearance yesterday. At the same time, we actually are like honored at the great success that obviously like the St. Louisans had with the national team. So I think a pretty cool moment yesterday.
Absolutely. And that's something too. I wonder if, are you a part of coaching that you'll see Roman, Ben does it as well, really try to stay connected with his team. Ben Lunt has talked about the fact that goalkeeping can be one of the loneliest positions on the field. But I know that Roman works really hard to stay connected, whether it's he's coming halfway up the field, whether he's, you know, involved in the team with his ball skills. Is that something that you coach, Alex, is to try and stay connected with the field players as much as possible?
No, I think definitely like it's a huge task towards the goalkeeper, because yes, for sure, like, I think the game, especially if the ball is in the opposition half, it can be a little bit lonely, like, and just like the idea or the philosophy that we have behind it, the goalkeeper is our first attacker, and in the end, obviously, the goalkeeper is the last defender at some point. So I think you have to be connected towards your line and towards the team, because, again, we want to build with the goalkeeper in the start. Every single goal kick starts with the goalkeeper, so you're included from the beginning. And even if, like, let's say we have a corner kick, the goalkeeper still has to organize the rest defenses. The goalkeeper still has to be connected. What would happen in case they clear the ball? They have a counterattack. Can I be connected to my back line? Can I maybe help out and sweep the ball? So I think the connection towards the line, definitely sometimes tricky in certain moments, but really important for the goalkeeper.
Oh, that leads to actually my last question for you. I would be in so much trouble if I let you get out of this interview and not ask you about set pieces. So I remember watching, and not understanding until, I don't know, several games into the very first City season that you yourself are the one a lot having that feedback. And it at first I was like, really? And then I was like, oh, that probably makes a lot of sense. Who probably knows so much about set pieces are the goalkeepers trying to defend them or watching an attacking set piece. What kind of things does a goalkeeping, those perspectives are you allowed, without giving away any secrets, but that you're allowed to bring into that planning for set pieces, attacking or defending?
No, it definitely, I think, is an interesting aspect that, especially in the United States, a lot of goalkeeper coaches like do have the responsibility as a set piece coach. It's actually not that common in Europe. So I think it totally makes sense, because especially on the defending side, obviously you as a goalkeeper, you had to defend set pieces all your life. So you know more or less, okay, like, where do you want the guy's position? Do you want to have them more zonally? Do you want them to have them more man marking? What is happening if there's a right foot attacker? What's going to happen if there's a left foot attacker? So I think especially on the defending side, it definitely makes sense. On the attacking side, being honest, like I sometimes just really think about different options, like how can we try to score a goal? Obviously, I have a lot of great takers. I have a lot of great attacking set piece players, and they make it easy for me to actually like put them in good positions to score goals. But this is definitely the more, I would say, innovative part, where you really try to come up with new ideas, new plays towards it, and try to be a little bit more creative on the attacking end.
And that's got to add a bunch of variables to it, too, though, when, if you have Leuven in the game versus Hartl taking the shots versus, whoever's standing there. If you've got Henry Kessler in the mix, potentially, that's a different kind of thing you can do. That you must have to plan for a lot of different things that could possibly happen.
No, I definitely do have to. And as you mentioned, like, I think just like different players have obviously like different skill sets, and you always want to use them and you want to put them in the best positions possible. I think always an interesting one is like substitutions. When you think about like you take your main taker off, or you design a set player for the center back, and the center back has to come off because of an injury or something, and then you obviously try to have to adjust it within like 30 seconds, sometimes 60 seconds, sometimes maybe you have a minute or two. So yeah, definitely a challenging task is sometimes like during like live play and within the 90 minutes to always try to stay on top of it, but definitely challenging, and I do enjoy it.
Well, Alex, thanks for your time tonight. Thanks for all you do for the team. It's always enjoyable to see what you've got, planned up your sleeve that we get to find out on game day. And congratulations on being naturalized as a U.S. citizen and a formal welcome to the United States.
Thank you so much for having me, and I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Alex. That was Alex Langer, City SC Director of Goalkeeping and first-team goalkeeper coach, who does so much more than train the goalkeepers, by the way. He's involved in all that set piece magic for St. Louis City SC. Stay right here. One more segment to go, and we talk FIFA Club World Cup with Mr. Soccer himself, Bill McDermott. He's up next on KMOX. Last segment of the St. Louis City Spotlight tonight, and don't miss it, because we're going to still talk soccer, but we're going to talk other soccer just besides our MLS team in town. I want to mention before I get him on the line that I wouldn't be doing my due diligence if I didn't also talk about the women's game. The United States women's national soccer team is currently playing the Republic of Ireland, and in the 40th minute right now, lead by a score of 1-0. We're also going to talk about the FIFA Club World Cup. Last night, actually, in the City game, I did a couple of scoreboard updates, and of course, talked about the FIFA Club World Cup, but I don't need to update you on it because I've got an expert on the line. It's Mr. Soccer Bill McDermott, who's probably watched all the games today. Bill, have you watched your fair share of soccer today, Bill?
Not all, Jim, but as you just said, my fair share. Real Madrid playing Red Bull Salzburg as we speak, but there's some fabulous, and I mean fabulous competition coming up this week, highlighted by this weekend, I should say, Miami and Paris Saint-Germain. That's on Saturday. That was changed. It was initially supposed to be on Sunday. Palmeiras is playing Botafogo, Flamengo against Bayern, and then Benfica against Chelsea. Those last two games I mentioned are on Sunday. But what's real key to it, Jen, is that this is an overall This is FIFA's plan. This is an overall dress rehearsal for the World Cup in the United States next year. Foremost among which, for all the reasons, is the fact that five venues being used in this competition are being used at the World Cup next year. So they're just trying to get a feel, bringing soccer to the United States, making it the epicenter of the sport this year and next year, how fans are going to receive the World Cup for the first time being hosted by three countries, as you've mentioned many times, United States, Mexico, and Canada. But I think the biggest change is the fact that there's going to be 48 nations at the World Cup next year.
Yeah. I'm just thinking about this particular competition, too. And when I talk to friends of mine, right, who some of them know soccer more than others, this mm-hmm. is not one necessarily that everybody is as familiar with, right? You know your clubs, right. You know, maybe right. you're an EPL follower, you know the World Cup, but then you have to say, you have to remind, it's Club World Cup.
Mm-hmm.
This kind of thing feels like it's a little blend of like in your clubs, it's a little blend of World Cup, but it's not the traditional World Cup. It's a little bit in between. What can fans get from this part of the game, and what teachings is FIFA learning from this competition?
Again, whenever FIFA does something in the United States, Jen, because of the size of our nation and because of the relative new aspect of MLS taking over, I say relatively new because we know the league just started in 1996. It's not that old, but they're just trying to sell the sport in our country. And as a follow-up to what you just asked, I think it's a great opportunity for fans to see on a regular basis, not just on television, but at some of the venues around the country, some of the better club teams. Again, we emphasize that some of the better club teams around the world that you see playing in the Champions League on a regular basis, and in the process, literally some of the best players in the world right now, and you get a feel for the club versus country concept. Still difficult for a lot of American new soccer fans yeah. to grasp the idea of the club versus country, but you get a chance, as a follow-up to your question, Jen, to watch a little bit of both and to get a preview of some of these fabulous players who will be in the United States next year.
Well, you know, I think about this, and I'm thinking about you've got a grandkid that we took my son, who's 14. His name is Liam. Is he's a pretty happy guy right now. I mean, he's not an Inter Miami fan, but he is a Messi fan, and he is interested in Botafogo, and he's interested in LAFC bounced out with their tie with Flamengo 1-1. Mm-hmm. Seattle lost 2-0 to PSG. I asked Liam if he had a question for you, and one of his questions was, do you think Miami can get past PSG? Because they are the last MLS team standing. A lot of eyes on the MLS right now.
Jen, right now, the way Paris Saint-Germain's playing, I don't think the 70 Brazilians could get by them. They are in top form. And all you have to do is look at their first. And everybody gets all excited about some various teams around the world. Oh, these players are literally from all over. There's nobody from their respective country. Well, that kind of holds true for Paris Saint-Germain. They have two French players in their first 11. But in the process, you get a chance to watch Usman. Speaking of players going to be in the country next year, Usman Dembele, Nuno Mendes, who really held Lamine Yamal in check. He's the only guy that's been able to do that. Vitinha, who gives an absolute tutorial in running the game at central midfield. Ashraf Hakimi, who I still think is one of the better, if not the best, right backs in the overall world, and Kvaratskhelia. Kvaratskhelia is a Georgian player, Jen, a Georgian player who's in the first 11 for PSG and is tearing people up. But I think that's probably right now the best club team in the world. All you have to do is look at the Champions League final. They take Inter Milan apart 5-0. That just doesn't happen in a final game of that type of competition. But you're going to get an excellent opportunity to watch over the weekend and before it concludes on July 13th, literally some of the best players in the world. And I know Liam, as you've mentioned to him before, likes the Brazilian teams. All four Brazilian teams qualified for the round of 16. And FIFA loves that, Jen, because Brazilian teams bring this overall dynamic of their fans following the team, the Sambas in the stadium, outside the stadium. My venue in 94 was Palo Alto. We had three Brazilian games, and they took over the entire city, the Brazilian fans did, with Pelé shirts on, Zico shirts on, Djalma Santos, just all kinds of players you've seen in the past. But they showed you what it is for a fan base to invest their nationalism in their national soccer teams.
So, Bill, are you calling it for PSG?
Yes, ma'am, I am.
Okay.
Yes, I am.
Got
I'm
an
not,
official prediction here. I love it.
I am by no means going out on any limb here, but and we'll wait to see what Real Madrid does. But Real Madrid still wrestling with a ton of injuries, but they have two brand new players in their back four, Housen at center back and Trent Alexander-Arnold at right back, who seems to be the guy who's going to take over the right back position. Still some injuries, and Mbappe's not 100% yet. He has some gastroenteritis, so he hasn't been able to play. So you're missing the opportunity to see there one of the best players in the world. But nonetheless, they're still stocked, and they are still Los Galacticos. Any time that Bellingham and Vinicius are still able to play, you're going to see a great game.
Well, Bill, thanks for your time tonight. Enjoy watching on Sunday, and we'll check back in with you some other time soon.
Yes, ma'am. Thanks, Jen.
That was Mr. Soccer himself, Bill McDermott, telling you you've got to go ahead and watch that. You better be watching Matt Rocchio that game on Sunday.
I will be, and I just want to, everyone, just do a little thought exercise. PSG's the best team in the world, and they sold the best player in the world.
Uh-oh.
So just think about that for a second, how that works. Sometimes you don't need the biggest name player and the biggest goal scorer to be the best team on the planet. Sometimes you can get rid of that player and get better.
That'll do it tonight for the City Spotlight. If you missed any of it, go back and check on the City Spotlight page on Odyssey. You can catch it here. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Jen Cease, and this is America's Sports Voice, KMOX.